Tom reminded me of the song by Connie Francis, Who's Sorry Now, which has something to do with retaliation. So he's going to share the lyrics.
Oh, if I had known, I would have brought my guitar. Or gotten Gail to bring her accordion. But this song is it's a remarkable that the lyric is so full of, well, you're getting what you deserve. That kind of message, you know, what Dave was just talking about. So some of you may know this, and you're welcome to sing along with me. It goes something like this. Who's sorry now? Who's sorry now? Whose heart is breaking for breaking each vow? Who's sad and blue? Who's crying too? Just like I cried over you. Straight to the end, just like a friend, I tried to warn you, but how? You had your way. Here's the clincher. Now you must pay. And even worse, I'm glad that you're sorry now.
Hey, let's always run a rule. How about you always hurt the one you love? Who sang that one?
Okay, well, thank you all. So we're on to about the secret of happiness, and of course I don't have the slightest idea what it is. But we can say a few things anyway, as we usually do. I wanted to begin with this wonderful little poem by St. Teresa of Avila. She's a Spanish mystic, as you know, from Renaissance times. And she is saying that the first issue regarding finding happiness is believing you have a right to it. And she commonly spoke back and forth to Jesus. Just these two words he spoke changed my life. Enjoy me, he said. This is Christ speaking to her. Enjoy me. What a burden I thought I was to carry, a cross, as did he. Love once said to me, I know a song, would you like to hear it? And laughter came from every brick in the street and from every pore in the sky. After a night of prayer, he changed my life. This time he sang it, enjoy me. So she thought, oh, my life purpose is carry the cross. And he's saying, no, it's about being happy. Enjoy me. It was hard for her to believe that that was okay. So he came back and sang it. So she got the message.
With his guitar.
Right. So our first entry into the secret of happiness has something to do with what we just talked about. And now I'm on page 54 of our book, The Sacred Heart of the World. Mystical consciousness requires a dissolution of ego, a willingness to go into the dark, the formless, definitionless space that lies at the base of all reality. In the depths of ourselves, we always knew that the ego was not all there was to us. A hidden life abides in us. The mystics lived from that place and called it God. Just as only a few saw the risen Christ, only a few see the deeper meaning of religion. Mysticism does not devalue religion, but revalues it at a different level. Mystics have grasped the fact that religious maturity does not happen because of beliefs, but because of ego transcendence, letting go of retaliation, for instance. And that leads us to be people who act lovingly, wisely, and healingly in the face of life's inexorable conditions. These are the virtues of Jesus and how he pronounced his unconditional yes to being human. So the first move toward happiness has to do with letting go of ego, not having to come from the egocentric place all the time, moving from accent on retaliation to accent on reconciliation. He has reconciled all things to himself in the cross. We're happy when we discover that there's another resource inside. We don't have to come from that street ego. We can come from a possibility inside ourselves that is full of unconditional love, wisdom, and healing. So the first move toward happiness is a journey away from the stuckness in ego in favor of how can I come from the place in me that's also in all of nature, this wonderful larger life, also called higher power, also called God, also called mystical consciousness, in which everything is one and the decisions we make are in favor of oneness, atonement, at-one-ment, rather than me first, I'm up, pull up the ladder. So when we move from that style of ego to this other style of connection, that is the first step toward happiness. And how ironic, because it would seem as if, well, you're happy when you get all that you want. This is a little different. This is, you're happy when you get it, that what we all want is what we commit ourselves to. This makes sense to everybody? Now, I want to go on to page 47. I have this quotation by Dag Hammarskjöld. He was the Swedish person in the 50s at the United Nations. And this is from his journal. This takes us to the second part of our topic. I found in the writings of those great medieval mystics, such as St. Teresa, whom I just mentioned, for whom self-surrender had been the way to self-realization, that they had found the strength to say yes to every demand which the needs of their neighbors had made them face, and to say yes to every fate that life had in store for them. They found an unreserved acceptance of life, whatever it brought them personally, of toil, suffering, or happiness. So he's saying, you move in the direction of happiness when your style is an unconditional yes to the things we cannot change. So it's a yes to the way people are, which would be the opposite. The yes is the opposite of control. Yes to the way you are. Yes to the way I am. Yes to the things I cannot change. Serenity to accept the things I cannot change. That's the equivalent of the unconditional yes. The unreserved acceptance of reality as it presents itself to me. There are things in life that can be changed. So when I go to the things that can be changed, I ask for the courage to change them. But especially as we get older, we notice there are fewer things left in that category. And there are more things in the other category, which are the things we have no control over, like the continuing wrinkles that keep getting added in the mirror every morning. So I'm saying yes unconditionally to the way others are. This is the equivalent of I'm noticing how they are and simply holding it mindfully and with loving kindness rather than judgment. And I'm saying yes to the way things are changing and the direction things are going in. I'm sitting in the saddle and the horse in the direction the horse is going rather than the direction I want to go. When I do this, when I find this in myself, and it certainly takes a grace to get here, so our prayer is, let me open to the grace of saying yes. When we move in this kind of direction, it's toward happiness. Because happiness is wanting what you have instead of hating what you have and wanting it all to be different. So you say, oh, it's like this here. So I think I'll just make the best of what I have. St. Teresa has such a powerful statement. I just found so much in this. I just kept contemplating it when I read it. She said, when you accept things the way they are, you're praising God. God has it like this, and so it's a praise when you saying yes like this. I thought it was so profound. Anyway, this yes just has to open in us, and you'll notice it opening more and more as you let go of coming from that ego place. So I have seen a direct connection between the letting go of ego. For instance, just the letting go of retaliation that I mentioned, that led me more into the yes. There's a statement by St. Paul in 2 Corinthians regarding Jesus. In him, there was only yes. Yes to what? Yes to the will of God. What is the will of God? The things we cannot change. What is the will of God? Reality. What is God? Reality. So when I'm saying yes, that surrender is the surrender of ego. Because what ego wants is to be in full control. Not to have things be just the way they are or people just the way they are, but to remold them in accord with what the ego wants. Reminds me of the stanza from a famous poem, Islamic poem, called The Rubaiyat of Omar Khayyam. Ah, love, if you and I could but conspire to change this sorry scheme of things entire, would we not shatter it to bits and mold it nearer to the heart's desire? So he's saying, oh, if we only had enough control, we could change the way things are and we could mold it in accord with what we want. That is the opposite of happiness. So secret of happiness, not really a secret. It's very open. It's a revelation of happiness. What is this revelation? That as I let go of ego more and more, I make contact with something in myself that has a larger bandwidth in the way it approaches other people. It goes to reconciliation rather than retaliation. It goes to allowing rather than controlling, so forth. And that when I go in this direction, I find myself opening more and more into the possibility of an unconditional yes. Within the surrender that comes with that yes to the way things are, to the givens of life, I'll mention some of them shortly. And I read this in a book I just finished reading by Richard Rohr. He says, the real prayer is the one that just comes up automatically from the surrender. Rather than, oh, I'm going to pray for this. I'm going to say this prayer. He says, the deepest and most real prayer is the one that just automatically comes when you surrender. So Just the word yes would be a wonderful prayer. In him there was only yes. Thy will be done. Thy will be done is the unconditional yes. So we've been saying it in the Lord's Prayer all this time. So what are some of these givens? A given is something that we have no control over. It's just the way it is. The first one that all of us have noticed is that everything in life changes and ends. So when the ego comes in and looks at the given everything changes and ends, it's going to try to freeze that, stop that. No, I don't want it to change. I want the relationship to be just the way it is all the time. I don't want things to end. Makes these feeble, paltry attempts, desperate, futile attempts to reverse the process. There's a higher life in us, a bigger life in us, that instead could embrace this. When I embrace these givens, that's the equivalent of happiness. Because I'm going with the flow. Secondly, we live in a world in which life that shows itself over and over again not to be fair. Sometimes it's fair, sometimes it's even generous. But it's certainly not reliably fair. So when I can say, oh, it's like that here, sometimes it's just not fair, and I can just let that be okay, then something happens between me and the way the world is. I relate to it in a way that no longer has opposition, no longer has a quarrel. It's simply a yes. And sometimes it'll be fair to me and sometimes not. All that matters is that I'm fair to others. Another given is that life includes suffering of some kind. Everybody has some kind of suffering in the course of life. Could be emotional, could be physical, could be spiritual, etc. And when I just let myself be okay with this and say, okay, so this is my turn to suffer in this way, I'll do everything I can to prevent pain from happening, but at a certain point, I simply say yes. When I do this, I change my relationship to the suffering, so I'm no longer the victim of it, but the holder of it, and in holding it, I notice that I become a more mature person, a person who has more character, a person who has more compassion for others who suffer the way I do. So these givens are actually the ingredients of character, compassion, courage. It's also true, as I look at these various givens, that people are not always loving or loyal. Sometimes they're unloving. Sometimes they're disloyal. What am I going to do? Hate everybody who isn't loving and loyal? Or do I say, oh, okay, it's like that here on this planet. Sometimes people are loving, sometimes not. Sometimes loyal, sometimes not. All that matters is that I act as one who is loyal and loving in every way I can. Result, happiness. Fight a tooth and nail, unhappiness. Everybody following so far? So the idea here is that there are certain givens that go with our life here on planet Earth. When I embrace these givens and somehow work with them, learn from them, when I say yes to them unreservedly, I'm actually saying yes to the law of life. Because these are laws, like laws in physics. They're non-negotiable. And the ego doesn't like laws like this. It's going to fight each one of these. It's going to say, oh, you're entitled to special treatment. These don't apply to you. Other people might go through divorce, but you shouldn't have to because you've got a great relationship. And you've got everything it takes so that everything will work out perfectly for you. just isn't set up that way. You see what I mean? And finally, I'm just talking about five givens, but there, of course, are thousands of givens, but I'm just mentioning five that for our purposes. Life does not always go according to plan. Another one that the ego would fight, because I'm going to make the plans and make sure that the plans are carried out. Opposite of control. Yes to the plan's not always working out. It didn't come out the way I wanted it to. But the one thing I can do, even though plans don't always come out the way I wanted, I can be open to the wonderful synchronicities, the wonderful coincidences that lead me onto a whole new path because my own plans didn't work out. They showed me some other way of going. They helped me on the design of my life journey. So this is where synchronicity comes in as the gift of plans not coming through in the way that you had decided they would. The traditional view of religion, of course, specifically responded to each of these in ways that made them not so hard-hitting. Religion, as we were originally taught it, especially in the Christian perspective, came up with answers that soft-pedal the power that these givens have to strike us with fear and challenge. So, for instance, yes, it's true, this is traditional religion speaking, yes, it's true that everything changes and ends, but God is eternal. And as St. Paul says, once this earthly tent is folded up, there awaits us in heaven a tabernacle not made by hands. In other words, once we die and our mortal life, we will begin an immortal life. So the fact that things change and end doesn't have to hit us so hard because we've got something waiting for us on the other side that extends life. And it's not a matter of change and end. It's a matter of changes and provisional endings to be followed by unending. Follow what I mean? Secondly, oh yes, life is not fair, but in the last judgment, Christ will separate the sheep from the goats. He will send the goats to everlasting hell, and they'll get theirs. And he will reward the sheep with paradise. So don't worry that it's not fair, because it'll all be taken care of later. Yes, life includes suffering, but Christ has shown how suffering can be redemptive. This one is a good answer. People are not loving and loyal all the time, but God is love. So it doesn't matter that people aren't loving and loyal, because as Jesus says, "Behold, I am with you all days, even to the end of time." Things don't go according to plan, but there's a divine plan that's bigger than ours, and God is providentially making sure that everything happens just as it needs to. These are the kind of answers we were given. We have to ask ourselves now, as mature people, do these answers still fit? But I am worried about answers that are meant to reduce the wallop of these givens. Because if these givens are the ingredients that we need to become people of character, compassion, and courage, then we wouldn't want to soft-pedal them. We wouldn't want to find outs, ways out of them. We would want to embrace them, be okay with them, say yes to them, trusting, and that's the important word here, trusting that if it's like this, it must be that this is what our evolutionary needs look like? How are we going to evolve as fully wholesome beings in a world of others? How are we going to help the whole universe evolve? It'll be more like a yes to the way it is already, rather than a canceling of them in favor of something awaiting us later. Okay, any questions about this part of it? Let's have new people that we haven't heard from yet. Okay, Jackie.
I have a poem that speaks to what you were talking about before, okay, about the two shadow sides.
A little closer.
Sorry. The two shadow sides that we have. White Dog says, "I must remind you again to love more abundantly, for that is why you are here." Black Dog says, "Don't be a fool. They won't love you back." I say, "Black Dog, why are you here?" Black Dog says, "I can keep you safe. I can hide you in a cocoon where nothing can enter." White Dog, why are you here? White Dog says, "I would not keep you safe even if I could, but I can bind your wounds, lie beside you until they are healed, and teach you to love your scars." I ask, perplexed, "Then I must choose between you?" Black and White Dog answer together, "There is no reason to choose. You need us both. Without the dark, how could you recognize the light? Without the light, how could you see to prepare for the dark? We are one. Embrace us both. We are the fabric of your soul."
Thank you, Jackie. That really fits. So the idea here is that we're going to be continually opening to both sides. That's what Jackie's bringing out. John?
This reminds me of when I first saw your book, Dave, The Five Things You Cannot Change, on the bookshelf at the Vedanta bookstore. I remember my thought to this day, "Oh, we'll see about that."
No, you're not alone, John. That's, you know, it's everybody. But I can say that of all the practices I've ever done, this has been the most helpful, is the yes. Yes to the way it is, to the way people are, to the things that happen. And I love that prayer of Reinhold Niebuhr, you know, the AA prayer. It'll always be the combination of accepting what you can't change and changing what you can, and wisdom to know the difference. That's certainly a perfect prayer. And so is the other prayer of Dag Hammarskjöld. "For all that has been, thanks. For all that will be, yes." Isn't that a wonderful summation of what real contact with the divine is about? It's a thanks for what's happened so far, and it's the yes to what is happening now and will happen. Okay, well, our time is almost up, and I want to end with a poem, but I want to say thanks again to all of you for the kind of attention that you bring to these talks. I can really feel it, and I really like how present you are as we're looking at all this. So I'd like to end with this beautiful sonnet by Shakespeare, since it's on the topic of love, and kind of pulls together some of what we've been talking about. And then for next week, if you can, again, concentrate on chapter 5, that will be our topic. Has to do with how we can bring loving kindness into our heartful kind of response to all these questions. And then if you can read chapter 4 also, that will pretty much pull it all together. And this is Shakespeare's sonnet about to how love lasts and how it would require a letting go of ego. Let me not to the marriage of true minds admit impediments. Love is not love which alters when it alteration finds, or bends with a remover to remove. Oh no, it is an ever fixed mark that looks on tempests but is never shaken. It is a star to every wandering bark, whose worth's unknown, although his height be taken. Love's not time's fool, though rosy lips and cheeks within his bending sickle's compass come. Love alters not with his brief hours and weeks, but bears it out even to the edge of doom. If this be error, and upon me proves, I never writ, nor no man ever loved. Thank you.